I became aware of my next guest almost 4 years ago when some short-sighted people in the media dubbed her the world's worst mom after she wrote a column in the New York Sun newspaper describing how she and her husband had let their 9-year-old son go on to the New York City subway system by himself. They live in New York. He'd been on the subway many, many times. He knew what the maps looked like and where to go and how to handle paying for it and all the rest. But because of that article, people declared her the world's worst mom. She fought back and has written many, many pieces since. Newspapers, a syndicated column, and a website called Free Range Kids. Last week, one of her pieces was picked up by the Wall Street Journal, which ran it on its op-ed page. And I'm happy to have her here today, Lenore Skenazy. Hi, Lenore. How are you?
Oh, great, Paul. And believe it or not, I'm actually sitting here with the former 9-year-old, now he's 13, who's homesick from school today. So you got us both.
So he survived that day and was able to continue to live another 4 years on the planet.
Another 4 years, although he did come down with a cold. So maybe it's all traceable to that subway ride. You never know. You can't be too safe.
I've been reading your website for quite a while, and I actually thought of you about a week ago before your piece showed up in the Wall Street Journal when I was out someplace and had a bottle of water. And I looked on the side of the bottle of water, and there was a warning on there that said the cap is a small object that could be swallowed by young children. A warning that needed to be there because otherise kids all over the world could choke on water bottle caps.
Choking on them. It's amazing they didn't warn you about the whole bottle because I suppose somebody could cut it into jagged strips and then use them to, you know, strangle somebody. It's just incredible how we're being treated. I mean, it's a confluence of things. One is obviously that companies are worried about being sued, and so they do jujitsu and they warn you first about the most outlandishly unlikely things. Just in case one of those outlandishly unlikely things ends up in court, they could say, well, we told you not to poke the bottle into your eye and use it to take out an eyelash, and you didn't listen to us.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that when we get so used to being warned about everything, you start believing that everything is dangerous. And television contributes to that. They'll tell you about a horrible story that happened somewhere, anywhere in the world, once to some child. And then they have to come up with something relevant other than we just wanted to scare you. So they'll say either that, you know, you can't be too safe and you better be watching out for your kids, or here are some helpful tips. My favorite was the one on Halloween. The Today Show warned viewers that nobody under age 13 should be going trick-or-treating unchaperoned because, quote, there are crazy people out there, they're in costumes, you know,
yep,
unquote. And it's like, really? Because when I looked up the study that was done of sex crimes on Halloween, the three researchers who were professors called their study Halloween the safest day of the year because, in fact, crimes against children, even by the weirdos in masks, do not go up on that day. And the reason they don't go up is because there's a bunch of children around, and that's what's safe, having people outside, not having them cowering at home. But we keep getting the information from the world, from the media and from the marketplace that our children are in constant danger. We need to either be watching them or we need to buy them something that will keep them safer than ever because times are so terrible. And, in fact, crime is down from when we were kids.
Yeah. But, you see, Lenore, you're crazy because you're relying on facts and data.
Right.
And they're relying on anecdotal evidence of some kid who could get a razor blade in their apple, which, by the way, has never happened either.
Right. No child was ever poisoned by a stranger's candy on Halloween. The thing about the razor blade in the apple baffled me, and I wish I could say it baffled me as a child. I'm not sure it did. But it's like, if you are handed an apple and there's a big gash in it and it's sort of sticky on one side and there's apple juice running down, do you think you wouldn't notice that there was a razor blade in there? Is that so likely? It's like saying, you know, there might be a grenade in your apple. Like, I really doubt it.
here's the better question. What kid is eating that apple on Halloween?
Yeah, really, really. Who's giving out an apple? Actually, this year I'm sorry to be harping on Halloween, but for my blog post this year on Halloween was that we should occupy Halloween and all of us should give away just homemade treats and then see what happens, okay? Because are kids going to not eat anything, or are we going to go back to trusting that our neighbors aren't psychopaths trying to poison our children on October 31st and let them eat some, you know, a homemade cookie from your neighbor? I mean, the idea of thinking that your neighbors could possibly be these crazy child killers who just, you know, are able to rein it in 364 days of the year, just makes you start thinking in those outlandish terms. If you start thinking that they're out to poison your kids on one day, then you could think of them as really dangerous the rest of the time, too, because you've opened your mind to the worst-case scenario, or what I call worst-first thinking. Thinking up the very worst thing that could possibly happen or that somebody could possibly want to do, and then acting as if that's probably the first thing on their agenda and that you have to prepare accordingly. And when we think that way, which started with Halloween and sort of burgeoned to the rest of our time, we really see the world as filled with only pedophiles and perverts, and the only thing that could possibly save our children is not, God forbid, teaching them self-reliance and confidence and some street smarts, but being there like Superman to protect them every second of the day.
You mentioned earlier the role of the media in this, and I'd like you to expand on that a little bit, because I really think that my colleagues in the media, both radio and television, and particularly print, they really are exacerbating this problem, aren't they?
Wait. Particularly print. I must take umbrage because I was a newspaper reporter for 20 years. But anyways, I do agree that there is something about the media which loves a child molestation story more than any other story, and a kidnapping too. I was traveling in Australia last year, which is any time ever since yesterday, I guess, or 2 days before.
Yeah.
And when I got to my hotel room in Sydney and I turned on the TV, the very first thing that came on was the J.C. Dugard story, which just shows that, you know, J.C. was the girl who was abducted at age 11 and finally released at 28 or 9 after she'd born two children. It's an amazing story, but is it relevant? Does it make any sense? Does Australia get stories of all the billions of children in America who have gone to school in the last 18 years who were not picked up from their bus stop and made into a sex slave for 18 years? No, but this is presented, and when you keep getting these stories brought up in any way, shape, or form the media can think of, because they know these stories sell, it'll be the anniversary of a disappearance, or it'll be, where are they now? You start feeling that 24/7 your children are in danger, because 24/7 you flip on TV and there's a child in danger, and it's either the news, which is, you know, really presenting you the worst possible stories from around the globe, or it's Law and Order or CSI or, you know, NCIS, one of these shows that rips the story from the headlines, adds a few cigarette burns or something else nasty, and maggots, whatever, and then they show it to us again. And you really start feeling like you're swimming in a sea of perversion, which is what I consider TV, and I guess you consider print.
Well, no, I actually think TV is the worst because it has Nancy Grace. So that covers...
And her imitators, which actually, now that I'm sitting here at home for the day with the sick kid, I said, let's just watch all these shows today and see what's going on, because everything is a warning. I mean, you're not going to stay tuned to TV if Nancy Grace says, up next, the 4 million children born this year who weren't snatched from a hospital. Stay tuned. And it's like, here's Jaden, here's Isabel, here's the other Jaden, here's Jeffrey. I mean, you would be there for years just watching, you know, the picture of each child who wasn't snatched from the hospital, and she would have no ratings at all. So instead, it's the one anomalous story that catches us by our guts. And I would never say that those anomalous stories don't occur. Obviously, they do. But they are so rare that if you organize your life around them, you know, of trying to avoid them, it's no different than organizing your life not trying to avoid them, because you will almost inevitably avoid them no matter what.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Lenore Skenazy. Her website, by the way, is freerangekids.com. Great columns on there and great letters that she replies to from readers, some who don't agree with her philosophy and some who certainly do. You've actually heard from a tremendous number of people who say, you know what, I let my kids go play outside. I don't worry about them. They walk to school at 7 years old. Then they've been 100% fine. We're not going to fall for all of this fear-mongering, right?
Oh, yeah, I hear from them all the time. What I hear is a lot of that, and then I hear, like, I let my child go play in the park, but there's nobody to play with her, or I sent my daughter, you know, down the street to play with her friend, but the mother walked her home because she was, quote-unquote, very worried. You know, why had you let your daughter walk the six houses down the block? She's only 8 years old and anything could happen. This anything can happen mentality is really driving us crazy. I mean, it's making us miserable. We're always thinking about the bad things that could happen to our children, and it's making children miserable because it means that they don't have the kind of childhood we had, being able to get on your bike and go to the library or go to the pool or go to a friend's house. All of that has suddenly become what I call dangerized. It's a word I got from another sociologist, but it's, we choose what we're going to dangerize. We do dangerize the idea of children walking outside, but we don't dangerize us driving our kids somewhere. You know, we recognize, okay, yes, there's a slight chance that something bad might happen to them, but it's so slight, and driving is so normal, let's not dwell on it. We'd be crazy to think about our children being in a fiery crash every time we drove them to school or to the dentist. But we allow ourselves to fantasize that worst-case scenario when we let them go outside because we've dangerized their time alone, and we don't dangerize car rides.
But let me play devil's advocate for just a second. Perhaps we can explain the fact that kids aren't outside as much as they used to be because of technology, because of you know, games that kids can play on their TV, their Xbox, their PlayStation. They can do stuff on an iPad now, and they're more drawn to that sort of stuff than going outside and running around.
Well, first of all, I think you're absolutely right. The technology is a great draw, and once again, the sick child who's home today, where is he? He's in his room on his computer. I mean, there's almost nothing more fascinating to kids, but there's almost nothing more beneficial to kids than prying them away from the computer, from the Xbox, from the iPad at some point, and having them go outside and absolutely have no idea what to do. Because when they are bored out of their minds and there's nothing that they can poke or turn on or lift the lid on and instantly get entertained, then they have to come up with something to do. And that's the first rule of, you know, a happy life, is being able to entertain yourself or being able to problem solve. What am I going to do? All I have is me and my friend and a cup. This actually happened the other day when I was with my son, and I was downstairs talking to a bunch of people. And he and two of his friends were on the third floor, and they didn't have anything to do, and they did find a cup. And what did they do for the next hour was they sat around a table batting around the little plastic drinking cup as if it was a volleyball, and I couldn't drag him away. I mean, he was having the time of his life, because when children do get away from their electronics and do have to come up with something to do, especially when they're with other kids, they are creative. They communicate. Let's play it this way. They compromise. No, if it falls on the ground, is it out? No, it's only if it falls, you know, on this side of the line. I mean, they do all the things that we are desperately wanting them to do, and we try to pump into them with you know, after-school activities and tutoring, trying to teach them, you know, how to be creative and how to express themselves and how to wait their turn. That's all the stuff that happens automatically when kids are playing with each other without electronics and without a coach, I would say, without a travel soccer team, without mom telling them what to do or giving them another at-bat. It's when you're with your friends coming up with a game and organizing it yourself that your social skills come into play. Are you going to put all the good kids on one team, or are you going to delicately figure out a way to say, you know, we don't want John and Tim on the same team because they're both the biggest guys. Let's put one on one team and one on the others. I mean, all sorts of great things happen when you can, and I agree it's hard, pry your kids away from the screen. But one of the reasons it's so hard is not simply that the technology is so enchanting, which it is, but it's also because when they look out the window to see who's outside to play with, they don't see anyone.
There's nobody out there. That's exactly
right.
There's nobody
out there.
Yeah, everybody is inside. Partly because of technology, but also partly because of the fear-mongering. And as you were talking, I was thinking back to my own childhood when the simple joy of discovery was a daily part of my life. I would come home from school, put my stuff down on a nice day, even on a cold day. I just wanted to go outside and discover stuff. And if my friends were out there and we could make up a game, holy cow, what's the last time in your life you got to make up a game and then just play with that?
Also, what about the power? I mean, there's a real feeling of not only creativity, but you've made something happen. You know, you didn't just press a button and something happened to you. You created something. But when you were talking about when you would go outside on your own, you know, I don't blame parents themselves for being so paranoid, because I feel it's a whole culture that is telling us that if we're not paranoid, we're not good parents. And One of the devices that I just cannot believe exists, but in fact is a new popular item in the children's market, is it's a backpack that's like a child carrier. You know, the things that you can put your kid in while you take a walk or whatever, yeah, instead of a stroller.
Yep.
But this one, it's sort of like a little stepladder step that you put across your back, and then you strap it onto you, and then your child steps onto that stepladdery thing. You know, the step, and then you somehow bind the kid to you, and they hold on to some grips on your shoulder. And this is a backpack carrier designed to carry around children who are up to 60 pounds or 7 years of age,
what?
According to its manufacturer. And if you go to the website, it's called the, I can't remember, it's like the baby, it's not the baby backpack carrier. I can't remember the name of it. But anyways, the point is, on its website, it says, this allows children to have adventures. And to me, this is the doublespeak you just have to be aware of, because this allows children not to have adventures.
Exactly.
You know, this prevents children from having adventures because they are stuck going literally exactly where you are going. They are with their parents every single second of the time. They can't possibly explore on their own because, by definition, they're exploring with their parents. And their parents are smarter and older and will point things out. And the child becomes so passive as to not even use their legs. And on the website it said it's for children who can walk but choose not to.
Oh.
Not to.
Yeah,
they're enabled by parents who think that that makes sense. And when you're in a society that tells you if you do let go of your child and they do climb a tree, what if they fall? Or if you do let go of your child and they walk to the end of the block, what if someone snatches them while you're huffing and puffing trying to catch them? After all, that's what happened to J.C. Dugard. Didn't you see the story on television yesterday? And then it was followed by 17 tips on how to make sure this never happens to you. You know how? Get a pair of handcuffs. Put one on your kid. Put one on you. Proceed as normal. I mean, it's just a crazy society, and all I'm trying to do is remind the world through free-range kids that our children are safer and more competent than our culture tells us they are.
Absolutely. When I have seen kids in the last 10 or 15 years walked around on leashes,
oh gosh, yes,
it literally turned my stomach. The last thing I want to ask you about, because we talked about corporate America, their mm-hmm. fear of getting sued, so they want to
make sure
they've got that on there. We talked about helicopter parenting in a certain way and making sure that, you know, your kid doesn't go outside. And what about the role of schools in this? I know schools get blamed for far too much because, mm-hmm. you know, I come from a family of educators, and I mm-hmm. hate it when people blame teachers and schools for society's ills. But what bothers me mm-hmm. is the fact that we have lost recess at schools.
Oh, any school that loses recess does deserve just heaps of blame. I mean, it's sad that I have to pull out studies that prove that recess is necessary, but if there are studies that talk about it, and a well-exercised child is a happier child, is a more focused child. My son said if they didn't have recess at school, he couldn't figure out why he would ever go. You know, I mean, for kids who aren't really into school, it provides, you know, the one reason for living, if you ask me.
Yep.
And to say that, well, we have to drill our students harder because there are all these state-sponsored tests, and if they don't pass the tests, then our school loses its funding or our teachers lose their jobs. There has to be some better way than those tests or drilling the kids for the tests, because if your kid is not moving all day, I know when my kid was bad in school, the thing that they would do to him is prohibit him from going to recess. That was his punishment.
Right.
No recess, which did not make him a better student the rest of the day, you know, didn't make him focus more on those exercises, those lessons that he was getting. Kids need recess the same way they need to eat. It's just part of how people are built, especially how children are built. They need some free time, and they learn a lot, like I was just talking about before. What you learn at recess is some of the very skills that you can bring to a standardized test, including focus, including paying attention and doing the right thing when you're supposed to. Just like in a game, you can't suddenly say, I know I'm supposed to have just 3 strikes and I'm out, but now I'm going to do 7 strikes. It's like, no, no, no. You go to the back of the line. You learn how to follow the rules. And those are lessons learned so pleasantly that they get incorporated into a kid. And if it's only a teacher saying, pay attention, turn the page, do another problem, you're going to have a lot harder time getting that focus into a kid than if you let them have recess.
Great points, Lenore. And I hope that here at the beginning of the year, I know you've been fighting this fight for many, many years.
Yeah.
And I'm a little bit past it because my daughter is going to be going off to college this fall.
And, oh, congrats. That's great.
I mean, she's going to be independent, the kind of the way we hope that we've raised her all along, so that she can, you know, make her way in the world and know how mm-hmm. to play and work mm-hmm. and all mm-hmm. those things on her own. That doesn't start, by the way, when they're 18 years old. It's got to start mm-hmm. when they're 18 months old. Mm-hmm. Parents have to be doing that. And I hope that perhaps this year more people will hear your message and we can, you know, affect a little bit of change in the world. That'd be a good thing.
Oh, Paul, I really hope so. And I do sometimes think the tide is turning. I think at least in terms of free play, there are enough academics coming out saying that this is crucial for child development, that people will start seeing it as important as, like, after-school Mandarin lessons. I hope.
Lenore's op-ed in the Wall Street Journal last week was called Boozy Babies and Other Overhyped Panics. I will put a link to that and to her free-range kids site on my website, harrisonline.com, a little bit later on today. A great pleasure to talk to you, Lenore. Thanks so much, and Happy New Year.
Oh, thanks, Paul. Oh, yeah, you Happy New Year, too.
Thank you, and I hope your son feels better, too.
Okay, I'm going to go see.
This is the Big 550 KTRS.